That went to number 8, Watch Your Willie, at 7-2. The 7:30 went to number 4, Shariva, at 10-1. The 8 o'clock, that went to number 8, Malacca Hill, at 7-1. And the half past 8, that was won by number 3, Fraser Kerry, at 13-2. And that's your sports headlines on this Friday night. From me, Joe Stack, a very good night to you.
You tune to Radio 1. Tonight's late session comes to us from Scull Sowry, Willie Clancy, which is taking place all this week in Milltown Malby. So it's over now to Áine Hennessy.
Agus á fáilte romh ag a gláir a páirte chláir speisialta a teacht chomh ó Ródaí Radio na Gaeltachta agus muid an seo i gCeartlár Clóid na Cafach i gCondaoch Láir. Where Scull Sowry Willie Clancy is in full swing since last Saturday. We'll be meeting a few of the many visitors here this week a little bit later on, but we start off with City Music recorded at Monday night's City Recital. Tommy and Siobhan Peoples with a couple of reels, The Maids of Mullochmore first of all, followed by one of Tommy's own compositions, The Hill Road. The Illan Pipers, who has launched an album here this week at Scull Sowry Willie Clancy, is Brian McNamara. The album is A Piper's Dream, and Brian joins me now. Brian, very much influenced by your own South Leitrim roots, I think, the album.
Yes, well, I'm very fortunate to grow up in a very musical family. My father's quite a well-known flute player, and I have many brothers and a young sister who all play. The piping tradition wasn't something that was current when I was learning myself, so I learned the pipes from a family friend from outside the locality, but a lot of the repertoire I play has come directly from the local area.
Now, you mention in your very extensive sleeve notes, particularly about the piping tradition of South Leitrim, that it was actually quite strong at one stage. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, well, something I think we can take some great pride from. It going back to the 1700s and 1800s, there were a number of what may have been regarded as gentlemen pipers in the area. Many of them had to emigrate, of course, around famine times, and some of the more noted names will be, say, Sergeant James Early, who became a sergeant in the police force for Francis O'Neill in Chicago. He came from 2 fields away from where I was born and reared, and it's just lovely to think that one can be a link in that chain.
Tell me a bit about your own musical background now. How you mentioned your father there as being one of the main early influences on you. Who else would you have been listening to and learning from over the years?
Well, locally, I suppose I played quite a bit of music down in St. Drumshambo, and people know of Paddy Dagan and Seamus Horne, great musicians and personalities as well. The person who taught me directly the instrument is a man called Peter Maguire, a native of Mullaghorn, County Cavan, now living in Dublin. So I would have received a lot of my instrument-specific tuition from Peter, and maybe a lot of some of the piping tunes associated with the tradition directly from Peter, and as well as from tutors here in Milltown Malba, where we're now talking today.
Now, you mentioned emigration there, and emigration being a very much an integral part of County Leitrim. You yourself haven't emigrated out of the country, but you have, of course, had to leave County Leitrim in search of employment.
Such as modern day life. But one tries not to cut ties completely, so I visit my parents as frequently as possible. I'm now living in County Meath, and I have to say I'm one of many migrants to that county, which is a great hotbed, really, of musicianship and music today. So I'd like to think I can keep very tangible links with my homestead, where possible.
And would you be very much involved in music now in County Meath?
Yeah, it's fair enough, I think, to promote my weekly session, which is on a Thursday night, which is in the pub Dowling's on the Drogheda Road outside of Ashbourne, and attended by many, many great musicians. So, yes, it's very fair to say I'm in a hotbed of music, so it's pretty pleasant.
Can I take you away from music just for a moment? And, I mean, you're involved in a most interesting career as well in DCU.
Well, it does pay the mortgage. yeah, my day job is a lecturer in Dublin City University, and nothing to do with music. It's probably the other side of the brain at work for most of the day. Engineering. I specialise in bioengineering. So I teach undergraduate engineering, postgraduate engineering, and my specialty is in bioengineering.
And do you find that then music would give you very much a release from that, that it's something, it gets you away from this sort of academic side of life?
Yes, perhaps that's even an understatement, Anya. It certainly does. And I haven't said there's a lot of crossover. I think the fact that in my discipline, my work discipline, one has to be logical and one has to use an engineering term, reverse engineer or be analytical. I can bring the same thing to apply to my music, and it certainly does benefit me. But yes, in terms of a psychological factor, it's the most pleasant release, yes.
We talked 2 years ago when yourself and the rest of the family released that wonderful album, Leitrim's Hidden Treasure. And have you been working ever since that release on getting around to doing your own solo album?
Well, yes, it's fair to say I've been thinking about it, if not exactly working on it. It's something I've thought about for many, many years, but I always thought the family album was something that had to be given priority, and we got that out of the way, so to speak. This is a very much continuation of the theme. Looking at the number of the repertoire and the number of the tunes on the present album, it is very much an extension of what we did 2 years ago. I really took into it with a vengeance, I suppose, about 10 months ago when I decided, yes, I put date in the diary for recording, and that's back in last August, September, thereabouts.
And we have the finished product here with us now, and I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to select a track from it to play.
Well, that's not necessarily easy. I'm always happy for people to have their own preference, but perhaps a suitable track would be track number 10, Three Reels, very much from the South Leitrim tradition. Three Reels called Satin Slipper, Our House at Home, and Jackson's Hi Ho. Tunes taken from collections of Sutherland, a local fiddle player and collector of the area. The first one can also be found on Neil's. The second one hasn't been found in other books. However, it's a tune that was known locally as Mulvey's Reel for many years, because Mulvey was a piper in the locality, and he'd inherited a collection from this guy Greer, who collected many tunes in the area, hence it got this name. But a more authentic name is Our House at Home. And then we have Jackson's Hi Ho, a tune associated with the Jackson of Limerick, Walter Jackson, but it was a tune played a lot by fiddle players in the area. So. It's also, I think, suitable because I'm joined on it by my sister Deirdre, who's playing concertina, and Michael Rooney and Jens Komnik on harp and guitar, respectively. We'll be right back.
Three reels there, the piping of Brian McNamara from South Leitrim, and that's taken from his new album. Now, among the other guests here during the week from Scotland, from the Isle of Barra, is Flora McNeil, who spoke earlier in the week about the song traditions of Ilan Barra, and Flora joins us on the programme this evening. Flora, welcome, first of all.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about your first impressions of Milltown Malbay and Skull Sour Willie Clancy.
A lot of music. A lot of music. It's wonderful. And it's wonderful to be here. I'd heard of the Willie Clancy Festival for years. And I hope to come here sometime. And I used to hear about it from Padre Rieda. So I was always promising myself that I would come. So I'm here.
Now, could I just ask you a little bit about, say, the similarities and the differences maybe between the song tradition that you come from in Barra and, say, what you know of Irish traditional singing?
Well, I'm always interested in traditional singing, no matter where I go, and it's always the real thing I like to hear. And I admire very much what Marit Nigal does and songs that she's learned from her. From her aunt, Nellie. I love that recording, a few recordings of Nellie. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the tradition is just like my own. Not every family were in the tradition, really, or bothered very much about songs or the tradition. But I had a family who was very much very good tradition bearers, so I guess it's just about the same way.
Would most of the songs that you have and that you've carried with you through the years, would they mostly have come from your family?
Most of them, but I did learn songs from other islands as well, but mostly from my own family, my own mother and her sister and brother. My uncle Neil, my mother's brother, was the last Shenachy storyteller, you know, from the old style storytelling. So
it obviously has been a very strong family tradition. It's interesting, I note, that you talk about a lot of the people from whom you learn songs, and there seems to me to be a very, very strong tradition, particularly with women singers and on the Scottish Isles.
Yes, I've often wished that I had listened more to my Uncle Neil. I listened more to the women, because my Uncle Neil had a lovely, sweet voice. And he had a lot of the songs and about battles and love songs as well. But I did learn a few songs from him. He introduced me to one of my favourite songs, a Jacobite song, Maroon Kialog. And, you know, a few big songs like that I heard him sing. But I wish I had listened more to the men.
What about... Is there much song? Now, I know you yourself live in Glasgow, but you do go back regularly to Barra to visit and that. Is there much song there now?
Oh, yes. The tradition has carried on. There's a lot. There's more interest in it than has been in the last, say, 20 years. Before that, people tended to listen to a piano accompaniment and the little Gaelic we got on radio at that time was for about a quarter of an hour a week. And... quarter of an hour, a recital by somebody, and they were all, it was always piano accompaniment, so I suppose, you know, for a while people thought that was the way to do it, forget your old songs, you know, they're old-fashioned, but things have changed and people have realised that it's important to keep the old songs.
What about Gaelic? Is there much Gaelic still spoken on the island?
Oh yes, not as much as should be, but it's getting there, and it's being taught at the schools, and so it is. It's very hopeful.
Well, now, finally, just before I let you go, I'd like to ask you to select a song from. You have a newly released CD. It's just out a couple of months. I think maybe you'll select a song for us to play off.
Well, thank you very much, Anya. I think maybe Moidaranik Mibala, and my daughter Maggie, to whom I've been passing on songs. It's accompanying me on that track. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful singing there from the island of Barra, from Flora McNeil. Now, one of the afternoon lectures during the week was delivered by Pat Mitchell, the Illan Piper, and the title of the lecture was Development and Change in Illan Piping from the Earliest Times, and Pat joins us on the programme tonight. Pat, I suppose the first question I must ask you is, what would you regard as being the main changes that have occurred in Illan Piping?
Oh, Lord. Well, the changes go through all sorts of areas. Yeah, I mean, there are changes in the instrument. There are changes in the place and the overall context of the playing. There are changes in the music, although from my point of view, I'd like to see very little change from what I knew 30-odd years ago. You actually have to look at it from the point of view of what went before Illan piping. So you had the Peab Mór, say, from the, well, at least we know of it from the 12th century. And then you had the pastoral pipes, which were probably almost certainly developed from the French work on the Musette. And they added on, they started off probably in the 13th century, they started off melt-blown pipes like the Peab Mór, and then got a lot lighter by adding on the bellows, and made the tuning a lot easier, by the way, by doing that. And then they added on the Petit Chalumeau, which is almost certainly the precursor of the regulator on the pipes, sometime in the, early 17th or mid 17th century. And then you got this marvellous instrument called the Union Pipes. Well, where Illan came from, God only knows, and I won't go into that. But that arrived out, and that made a big change because you could actually play staccato. Now, the Northumbrian pipers went the same road, but they kept something very like the French musette with a parallel bore instrument, totally stopped at the bottom. In the early days, all of their piping was staccato, although these days they do a lot of legato playing. It sounds very nice, but in the early days, certainly their piping was totally staccato. When the Illan pipes came along, you were able to sit down, you were able to put the chanter down on your knee. You could play staccato, you could play legato. In other words, you could play the full range of tones and styles which were current in Western art music, I suppose, at the time.
As far as we know, and I know this is probably quite a difficult question to answer in terms of that we don't have recordings going back further than, I suppose, about 80 or 90 years, how much do we know about how much, say, the technique of playing the pipes has changed?
Oh, my God. Well, you have to sort of draw parallels. Jimmy O'Brien Morton has done great work, and certainly we know that roles and various types of ornaments were played by Paddy Keneally. But Paddy Keneally used the old style fingering, where the tips of the fingers in the top hand were used. So he didn't use that lovely sliding C that you get, say, in the Kerry pipers from around about 1900. So there has been a change in that, and in fact, if you look at the tutors, O'Farrell's, and which was around about 1800, Coakley's 1846 or so, you see them telling you, put the on the top hand, put the tips of the fingers on the chanter. So that's a limitation, and there are certain things you can do. But if you go on a little bit further, you find pipers like Hannigan, I believe the name was, who played perfect staccato runs, as it was described in the newspapers. So they played all this monster music, but instead of playing it legato, they played staccato. So you had all these sounds going right through it. Also, there was a great interest in the late 1800s in tone. We have the evidence of we have a recording of a man called Mihalis Ulwan, Mickey Cumbaz, he was called, from about 1900, where you've got this absolutely marvellous playing with all sorts of wonderful tonal effects, as much as we can make out from the old recording. But you also have the evidence of Martin Riley from Galway, who went over, blind man from Galway, who went over and spent 5 months waiting for his pipes to be made by Michael Egan in Liverpool. Now, Egan, you could say, was the Stradivarius of pipe makers. So why did the man who made his living by horsing out tunes for dancers go to Liverpool, a blind man, and spend 5 months there? He has to have been interested in the tonal qualities and the response to the chanter, which is more than just playing straight dance music.
If I were to ask you to assess the health of Illan piping as it is at the moment, how would you assess it?
certainly number-wise, there's great strength in it. For a great many years, I was a little bit nervous that the standard was going down. I was attracted to the music because the sound of the lower pitch pipes, C and B flat and stuff like that. And of course, most of the people around at the time were madly interested in concert pitch pipes. And a lot of them, I have to say, I mean, some of them were beautiful, but a lot of them were quite raucous, and they really weren't interested in tone. They were interested in volume. They were interested in just horsing out tunes. But I see a change around now. There seems to be an awful lot of people who are going for the lower pitch pipes, who are trying to get the different tonal effects, who are playing music, as I understand music. So I think maybe there's something good happening there. Maybe there's a little bit of strength coming back into it, as I would understand it.
Final question for you. This week, this summer school is dedicated to Willie Clancy. You yourself were a great friend and a great admirer of the music of Willie Clancy. What do you think he'd have thought of it if he was here?
Of the Willie Clancy Summer School? He probably would have been amused. He was a man who enjoyed a bit of crack. But certainly he was mad keen to have people play the music, and not just the pipes, but he loved the music itself, and that's the prime thing. That's the thing that everybody should be looking at, the music. The instrument is secondary to the music. I mean, you can fall into the, you know, into the flute playing style, the pipe playing style, the fiddle playing style, but really it's the music that's the primary thing. And that was something that Willie was very, very keen on.
Music there from Willie Clancy on Illan Pipes. Another of the new CDs which was launched this week features three members of the Mulcahy family from Abbeyfeel in County Limerick. Nick, Louise and Michelle. And Mick and Louise join us on the programme this evening. Nick, first of all, when did the idea come to you of making the family album?
Well, we met, it was born out of Willie Clancy week here about 4 years ago. And I hadn't met Mick Maloney for a long time. And we started talking anyway, and the next thing we were on the stage playing a few tunes for the concert, and we got, Mick has these tours, so Mick asked me and the girls to play for the tours in Killarney and up here in Milltown Malby. So we played for a year then, and Mick said to me, would you not think of making a CD of the family? So I said we might get around it. So eventually it happened anyway, and we got the music together and we recorded there last February.
It must make you very proud, the fact that you're playing music with your daughters, and that your daughters are so both, I think, proficient and have such a great love for the music, which obviously you have passed on to them over the years.
I have, and I have a deep love for the music. And I remember when they were, never realizing that I might play one day, but I remember when they were in the cradle, every night I'd play a tune, and you know, I'd put them there, just go to sleep. But they grew up then, and Louise started playing the tin whistle, and she got onto the concert flute. And I remember when Michelle was 2 years old, I have a photo of it actually. She was on the floor tearing at my accordion. trying to knock a tune out of it. And I realised then that there might be something happening here. So another couple of years passed, and I took him to music classes then. And then I used to go out into the garage at home, and I'd write out tunes for them, and I'd play tunes person to person, and got into it. They have so much music now, they have more than myself.
Well, Louise is here with us as well, and Louise, is that true? What age were you when you started playing, do you remember?
I think it was around six. I started on the tune whistle at the local Coltis branch, and then as time progressed, I went on to the flute and listened to lots of CDs, and Dad, of course, had a great influence. And then I was around 14, I took up the Eilean pipes as well. Yeah. So I really enjoy it, you know.
Now, the Eilean pipes would be regarded very much as a very challenging musical instrument, but I think you've mastered it very well, and you certainly seem to enjoy playing it very much.
Yeah, I really do. I think when you enjoy an instrument, it makes all the difference, and I think you can see it in the playing when you listen to it. And I just think it's a wonderful instrument to play and to be able to master.
Tell us a little bit about making the CD and about the whole going into studio, selecting tunes and all that type of thing.
Yeah, I think it was around February last 99 when we started, and we spent about a week recording. We recorded 14 tracks on the first day, and then I think we had just two or three left on the second and third day. And the fourth day, I think, then was spent mixing it. And throughout, we had a great, you know, great time, great fun, great laughs with it.
Now, that's Louise there, and you mentioned both Louise and Mick Maloney, who was the producer of the album. And I think Mick Mulcahy was saying, Mick Maloney, that it was your suggestion as well that the album should be made.
Oh, well, it wasn't much. There wasn't much brain power behind that suggestion. It was obvious that they were extraordinary musicians, and that, you know, all extraordinary musicians need to have their music heard. And so that wasn't a major stroke of creativity at all. But getting the record done was magnificent. It was just, I mean, it's come out just wonderfully.
You yourself, you've been living in the United States for many years, and I think you spoke there at the launch earlier today about how important it is to come home and to hear what's going on in terms of traditional music back here in Ireland. Does it surprise you to hear musicians of the caliber of the young Mulcahys?
Well, it you know, coming home regularly, after a while you almost get desensitized with the huge profusion of brilliant young musicians everywhere. I mean, you think this is, when it started to happen, it was amazing. And there's so many now that it's astonishing, and the culture is in a real renaissance. But what's really unusual about the Mulcahys is that their music, even though it's as technically accomplished as anybody's, and the playing is virtuoso playing, it's really grounded in an old traditional way of thinking and of playing, and it represents a very important connection with heritage and with roots, I suppose. And it's that deep connection that I think is remarkable about their music.
Do you still enjoy very much and feel it's very important for yourself musically to come home regularly?
Oh, it is. I mean, I feel so fortunate. I've been away in America 27 years. I was in England 5 years before then. And the story of people really who are removed for that length of time, you lose connections with the homeland, especially when your parents go and you know, and you're out of touch with the day-to-day lives of people. But if you have music, I feel so fortunate with music, because the bond is so powerful, it's so deep, and you know, it goes beyond words. And I've never felt, for all the years I've been away from America, I've never felt away. And when I come back, I can plug right in again. And it's all because of the music. If there wasn't something deeply rooted like that, I think I'd have a very difficult time.
Mick, thanks very much indeed for talking to us. And we'll hear a track now from the Mulcahy family album, from Mick, Louise and Michelle together. A couple of jigs, Courtown Harbour and The Smiling Bride. We'll be right back.
Lovely music there. Jigs from Nick Louise and Michelle Mulcahy, taken from their new CD. Well, I'm joined in studio now by Muireadh O'Rourchan, director of Scoil Sauraigh, Willy Clancy. Muireadh, I suppose this is the 28th year now of the Scoil Sauraigh. I suppose there are things that get easier to do and things that get more difficult to do every year.
Well, there's no year that doesn't bring its changes, and that, you know, there's surprises as well, really. many you know, there was every year, you can never take it for granted that it will be the same. The school, you see, has grown to such an extent that, you know, there's always unforeseen little things happening, and you have to be ready to go in and solve them if possible.
There's very much, I think, over the last couple of years, you've brought in an international kind of an element to the summer school. For example, now this year we had some wonderful bluegrass music at the fiddle recital the other night.
That's correct, actually. Dirk Powell and Tim O'Brien. We're very fortunate, really, that there's so many musicians of different backgrounds coming. A lot of musicians, last night especially, classical musicians, who'd come to get a taste of traditional music. And there's a lot of... I was talking to Nepalese that were here last year, so there was a couple of them last night. There's musicians here from South America who play... One of them I saw them playing their own timber flute yesterday. So there's a diversification. It's worldwide. Really.
And we were talking to Flora McNeil earlier on in the programme, and of course the Scottish connection has become quite...
It has, very strong. It's very, and as well as being wonderful artists, they're wonderful people, the crowd who come here. We're delighted. Flora McNeil, Mary Smith. Flora from Barra and Mary Smith from Lewis. And then there's people from Harris here, from the end of Harris, from Oost, South Oost. And they have been coming year after year here. And, you know, we think that's a very important connection, to maintain that connection as well, because unfortunately for hundreds of years, the last few hundred years, Ireland and Scotland culturally was not they hadn't a great contact with each other, really, on any permanent basis. So for the last 10 years, we've brought a number of lecturers and artists from Scotland. And what's better, again, there's more of them coming on their own. You know, several Scottish people are taking part in various workshops. So that really just, that's again one aspect of it. I'd say this year we have a lot of people here from Austria, Norway. You know, there's a very big, large group of Austrians here.
Okay, we're also joined here in studio on the programme by Tony Kearns, and many of you listening who will have seen photographs taken at the summer school over the last number of years will probably have been looking at the work of Tony Kearns. And Tony, I know yourself and Barry Taylor are working on a special project, which I suppose is a way maybe of having a permanent record of the Willy Clancy Summer School. Tell us a bit about it.
That's right, yeah. Since I started taking photographs in 1992, I've felt that such a tremendous amount of things have been going on here, in the classes, the recitals, the lectures, and the musicians that come here. And Barry's the same. He's written an MA thesis on the Summer School. And the amount of material we've amassed, my photographs and the recordings and the research that Barry's done, means that it has to be done, really. The means to do it, obviously, are the practical means are the difficulty, but there's so much there, and several, I mean, you might say volumes or whatever, but it's a tremendous week of traditional music activity, and it just needs to be acknowledged.
To be permanent. So when would you, do you have a time scale on when you hope to have this book together? Well,
we would like to sort of coincide with either next year's summer school or the year after the 30th, if you know, God willing, and that we have a chance to have it ready by then. At the moment it's in its gestation period. We're approaching publishers and we're talking about various means and ways and trying to persuade, and at the moment during the summer school we're engaging in a marketing exercise to get people aware of it and to sort of present at some point in the very near future to publishers the strength of the people's activity and interest in it. So at the moment it's difficult to say, but we're as soon as we can, without rushing or compromising quality or whatever.
Right, and I presume, Muireadh, it's something that the organisers of the summer school would welcome, to have something, to have a publication like
this. Well, we would, because it's one thing that people have come to us daily looking for in the history of the school, and they would like, in most schools that have at this date have lasted for so long that there has been publications. And now the Willy Clancy School then has, you know, there's a visual for photographics and for both text, and we're delighted that both Tony, that they're Well, I hope they will be very, very successful, and I think they will too, because they're both professionals at their job, and they're very much involved in the summer school for years.
And I think it's something that most people will very much look forward to having something like that, maybe to keep it at home on the coffee tables. And just before I let you go, Marisha, I see that with a new addition now, you're carrying a mobile phone around with you. This, the Willie Clancy Week moves into the 21st century.
I still have to let another use the mobile phone, though.
Marisha, it's Tony Gramida Mahagav, August Thomas, and Derek Hurlish, Glor, and Uptle, Kyol, Own, Kyol, Hurm, Nefadoy Gamorda, August Nefadoy Gastania, Avir Shulani, Hannah Catherine McAvoy, John Wynne, and Tara Diamond on the three flutes here. Special word of thanks to our technician, Sean Welsh, and from Roll B, Radio Nagoyasata, and Shot and Shride Nakarach, Excel Sarah Willie Clancy, Slanagoth.
A selection of jigs played by Tara Diamond, Catherine McGorman and John Wynne ending tonight's late session, which came to us from Skull Sourer Willie Clancy in Milltown Mowbray. The programme was presented by Anya Hensley and produced by Peter Brown.
Need a nutritious meal in minutes? A lamb stir fry is simplicity itself. First, slice some lamb and marinate in soy sauce. Chop some vegetables. Now heat some oil and add a little garlic. Stir fry the lamb. Add your vegetables and stir fry a little longer. Then serve on a bed of noodles. Delicious 10-minute stir fry lamb. Lamb recipes now in shops or at www.boardbia.ie.
What's new, Pussycat? RTE Radio 1 presents Burt Bacharach at the National Concert Hall Dublin from July 21st. Tickets from £30 are available from the Concert Hall box office on 01475-1572. Don't miss Burt Bacharach in association with the Irish Times and the Conrad International Hotel.
The Summer Sale by Leah Ryan. If you want to make a dress, I know where you'll pay less. For huge reductions on curtains, cushions or a curtain rail, head to Home Focus at Hickey's Summer Sale.
The Home Focus at Hickey's Summer Sale starts 29th of June.
Everything going for buttons. W is for WAP.
A Motorola WAP phone from just £29 at Cellular World.
W is for weekend.
Weekend calls from just 2.4p a minute.
W is for web.
Free online shopping voucher worth £50.
W is for win.
You could win a holiday of a lifetime. Get details of this whopping great offer at any Cellular World store. Call 1850 300 200 or log on at cellularworld.ie.
W is for... What are you waiting for?
Terms and conditions apply.
This Saturday, the Lotto jackpot is heading for £3 million. It could be you.
5 minutes to midnight, time for the weather forecast. Here's Jean Byrne.
Good night. Well, most parts of the country will stay dry overnight, but there'll be a lot of cloud and this will give a few scattered showers, mainly in Connacht and Ulster. Winds will be only light or moderate in strength from a west to northwest direction. Lowest temperatures 8 to 10 degrees Celsius. Around dawn or shortly afterwards, more persistent rain will develop in West Connacht and West Ulster and will spread gradually to all areas during the morning and early afternoon, becoming heavy in places. It'll become quite windy also with strong and gusty westerly winds. Maximum temperatures 14 to 18 degrees. The pollen count for tomorrow is low in all areas. And the outlook. Clearer weather will follow from the Atlantic tomorrow night. And Sunday will be a bright day with sunny spells and showers, but some of those showers may be heavy and perhaps even thundery. And it'll also be cool.